Welcome in to another edition of The Current Report, our weekly roundup of what's happening in the world of digital media. I'm your host, Chris Brooklier. The latest in the so-called cookiepocalypse comes from the IAB Tech Lab's damning assessment of Google's replacement architecture for third-party cookies, its privacy sandbox. One of the big takeaways from the assessment is that, quote, in its current form, the privacy sandbox may limit the industry's ability to deliver relevant, effective advertising, placing smaller media companies and brands at a significant competitive disadvantage. The stringent requirements could throttle their ability to compete, ultimately impacting the industry's growth, end quote. Of course, Google refuted those claims in a statement, saying the assessment had fundamental errors and inaccuracies. So where do we go from here? To break it all down, we're bringing in two OGs in the digital advertising space, John Donahue and Rob Norman. Together, they have decades of experience and have been working since the internet's early days. All right, we are joined by John Donahue, partner at Up and To The Right, and Rob Norman, big-time advisor for several digital advertising companies. Glad to have you guys both on the show. How are you doing?
Doing all right, Chris. Thanks very much.
Doing well, Chris.
All right, perfect. So what are your thoughts just really on the privacy sandbox?
Yeah, so one, you know, we have a self-inflicted wound here. You know, there were practices in place within the digital advertising ecosystem that created the consumer concern on privacy, right? So fundamentally, the privacy conversation was created by the advertising industry and the practices that exist. And regulations such as GDPR, CCPA and such has forced regulations that are requiring us to change some of our fundamental infrastructure. Privacy Sandbox is a solution that takes a similar approach to Meta of a certain amount of data can be used to cohort, but you know, does not democratize the targeting back into the open internet, leaves it within a walled garden. And I do believe the Privacy Sandbox is also a great way to achieve consent, but it puts it back in a walled garden, makes the consent string opaque, makes the culpability thing fully reliant on Google. And, you know, Google has had ups and downs, but has had transparency issues and things occur with it.
I think that's right, John. If you zoom out to not even 30,000 feet, but 10,000 feet, we're sort of moving from a world where we're going from a non-consented universal identifier in the cookie. I mean, parenthetically, is that really true, given not the truth of Safari and Firefox and other forms of OpsAt have been over time, to a consented and non-universal identifier one way or the other? And so advertisers have to work within those constraints, which are legitimate from a consumer protection point of view. And there's a duality to this. One is working with the constraint of the identifiers that are available, and the other is how responsible you are in terms of the experience you want to create for consumers. So I'm kind of glad in a way that there's a tension over this, because I think Google is being held to account by the IAB, is being held to account by the Trade Desk. But on the other hand, Google is quite rightly saying that what we're not trying to do is create a direct and exact replacement for the cookie and a direct and exact replacement for all the processes in online advertising that created the issue in the first place. And my sense is the way this will settle down is that we'll have a drop from whatever 100 looks like today to 65 or 70 when people try and do the old things in a new way, but it will climb back into the 80s and 90s when people adjust what they're doing, adjust their expectations and their ambitions to a sort of a newer world order. And there's a kind of history in that sort of dynamic working.
You know, there's history in what Rob said there that's very important for us to realize, because, you know, the key to being smart for me in digital is be stupid enough to not be dumb, right? Which is just like, this has already occurred, so let's look to the history and understand what we're looking down on the gun of, and then the goal then becomes is to help that transformation from a workflow perspective to make those changes to get to that 90% quicker.
And there's a weird aspect to this, of course, as well, because when you hear people discussing this, it's almost as if the point of departure was the cookie was perfect in terms of its ability to identify people accurately and to be used for targeting, optimization and attribution purposes. And we're going from this perfect world to this other world, which feels much less perfect. And of course, the cookie was never perfect in the first place. And so what I hope is that there's an argument that says dependency on cookies was a lazy proxy for really thinking about how consumers identified and how cohorts identified, and maybe this sort of forcing function of not having a cookie and having to think more widely about the role of identifiers and cohorts actually get us to a better place in terms of our craft, rather than relying on something that wasn't all that good in the first place.
That's interesting. We've had the internet for maybe 25 years, like really kind of at this point, we're already seeing examples of history repeating itself. In this specific case, do you know how long it'll take for companies to really make that adaptation to get where they want to go?
You touch almost on a wider concern. They're going to be motivated to do that. And the way that money flows in advertising is that money flows to the best performance of the next marginal dollar of expenditure. And so when one piece of it gets compromised, what can happen is that money flows out of a channel and into another channel. The one thing the advertising business has depended on in its life more than anything else is an active relationship between publishers and consumers, because it's upon that active relationship that we rely for distributing messaging. So I think one of the things that I'll be urging people that I work with, and I hope other people will too, is say, it's really important that you work your way through these new dynamics in programmatic, not just to make the channel work on its own, but to ensure that the funding keeps going to the media that matters to all of us.
I couldn't agree more. And I think there's realities that exist now, right? Like iPhone users, for the most part, are relegated to this already, right? Safari, mWeb does not allow for persistent cookie IDs. And it's like watching a fish climb out of the water and wiggle on the sand, as opposed to taking the time to grow a leg and walk, right? And just sort of change how they need to evolve in order to survive. It's sort of like we're at this great precipice of our evolve or die, right? Like, and, you know, these are the moments that, you know, I sort of love and enjoy, because it will create sort of that tension to force that evolution, you know? But the reality is that people that are freaking out about this is coming, it's been here, it's happened. You know, Safari has been redacting sort of those third-party cookies for a bit now. So, like, unless your marketing plan included woefully discluding people that have iPhones, which I doubt any consumer marketer has done, you've been sort of living a lie to date, right? If you haven't thought about growing legs and growing some lungs.
So then where do we go from here? You know, like, if we were talking a year from now, what does it look like? How does it play out? You know, what do brands do?
So I think that the message that everyone's understood is that success in digital advertising, or any advertising that is delivered to an individual or an individual device, depends on the quality of signals that you have when you're delivering. The cookie was a signal and a very heavily used one. So every advertiser, in my experience and in my opinion more broadly, is chasing for signals that they can used to put into the bid stream that can improve their performance. And it's not just personally identifiable information that is actionable signal that goes into the bid stream. It's corporately identifiable information too. It's how much do I sell? Where do I sell it? What zip codes do I sell it in? What time of day do I sell it? And so on and so forth. All of which are signals of their own type that drive performance. So my sense is that every advertiser is, if you like, doing a signal audit of its business, about what it knows about its customers and what it knows about its own sales and demand dynamics, and thinking about how to harness them to help them inform their activities in the bid stream. And to me, something they should have been doing anyway, but the urgency for doing that is greater than it ever has been. And I suspect that people harnessing those signals correctly will result in a situation they will have a more valuable and higher fidelity set of signals than the cookie ever was.
All right, good way to close it out. Next, here's our roundup of what's making news across the internet. Walmart made a splash last week by agreeing to buy TV maker Vizio for approximately $2.3 billion. Advertising is key to this deal, according to the retail giant, as it says it will give advertisers more opportunity to reach the right viewer. And this is the latest move bolstering the connection between streaming and retail data, as scale and first-party data fit together in today's world. And last year, Walmart's CFO John Rainey said he expects advertising to become a bigger percentage of the company's overall profits in the coming future, meaning it's evolving how it historically has made money. And finally, we're capping off this episode with one last thing. At first glance, politics and chocolate may seem like they have nothing in common, but dive in a little bit more and you may be surprised, as we explored in the latest episode of The Current Podcast. We had on execs from the Hershey's Company and the National Republican Senatorial Committee, who shared what they can learn from each other and how both sectors are adapting to marketing in today's world. Vinny Rinaldi from Hershey's broke down why targeting local markets is crucial to both CPG brands and political groups' bigger strategies.
We're looking at the same content areas to show up in as a brand to sell chocolate as you guys are to show up and influence somebody to vote one way or the other. In those big environments, you know, a lot of how we look to show up is how do we drive seasonality in local markets at a certain store. So you're right, in October, believe me, it's probably hot topic number one of like the lead up to our Super Bowl, October 31st. There's a serious presidential election happening a week later. Yeah. So how much will that play a role when we're buying, you know, market-based ads? So it is an area, I wouldn't say a concern, but an area that we're certainly focused on of like, how do we make sure we're showing up in the right markets during our most precious time of year, but being cognizant of some of the headwinds we might face based on what's happening in real time.
And that's it for this edition of The Current Report. For a deeper dive on all these stories plus more, check out thecurrent.com. And of course, please like and subscribe on YouTube, plus leave us a review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen. And if you want to hear more from The Current, listen to The Current Podcast, where we interview some of marketing's biggest leaders about their keystone career moments and where the industry is going next. We'll see you next week.